You've heard our open themes with listeners talking about their vocations.
Missouri dairy farmers, love issues, etc.
And what they're doing while listening to issues, etc.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love issues, etc.
We're looking for more of these elements to include in our open themes. Tell us about your vocation, hobby, or what you do while listening to Issues Etc. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7 at 618-223-8382. If you make a mistake, just start over. 618-223-8382. Thanks for listening, and thanks for contributing to Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
We think of local schools, but our local schools really aren't that locally controlled anymore. They're more like outposts for a big national chain.
When scripture is dethroned, something else will always be enthroned in its place.
This doesn't make any sense to me because you've been saying that we take the Bible literally, but not on this topic. And it was at this point where the Baptist pastor just looked at me in his office and said, well, it would be silly to think it's his body and blood.
This incessant quibbling over doctrine is interfering with the unity of the church and with church fellowship. That's nonsense. We have no fellowship with God apart from the divine word which Jesus delivered to his apostles.
Lutherans at the Old Latin School in Lutherstadt Wittenberg love issues, etc.
The Lutheran faith has always been a confessing faith. That is, it puts a strong emphasis on making a public confession, a sound public confession, that confession means something, that it's more than simply a document you once glance over, say, that looks pretty good to me, put your name on it and put it away. It's the ongoing life of the Lutheran confessions to continue to confess, not only in what we say, what we preach and teach, what we sing and pray, but also how we build our buildings and where we put those things in our church, like the baptismal font. It seems kind of odd to people who aren't used to that kind of whole-throated, whole-body, whole-church confession. But once they catch on, they realize what Lutherans are trying to confess, Christ and Him crucified. Welcome back to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. It'll be part two of our conversation with Matt Whitman of the 10-Minute Bible Hour on non-Lutherans' reaction to visiting a Lutheran church. Then Dr. John Warwick Montgomery joins us, author of the book Crisis in Lutheran Theology. We'll be talking about 20th century Luther scholar Gerhard Fürthe on the inerrancy of Scripture. Yesterday, we interviewed Matt Whitman. He's host of the 10-Minute Bible Hour on YouTube and the 10-Minute Bible Hour podcast. Today, it's part two of our interview on a non-Lutheran's reaction to visiting a Lutheran church. I asked Matt, what did he make of the pastor he featured in his video, Pastor Will Wheaton?
He kind of reminded me of me. Like, I don't know, he believes some things deeply, and he's also goofy and screwy and weird. And so it's a very positive first impression. I was like, I think this guy's weird in all the right ways. I like him a lot. And that continued to be my impression and continues to be to this day.
What was your initial impression of the architecture, the building, that worship space at St. Paul?
Coming in from the outside, it looked like your standard issue, colonial style, Midwestern style church that you'd see from any number of denominations. I mean, there's a little bit of homage to the High Middle Ages, the two towers kind of look. I recognize that, and that gives me a little bit of a sense as I'm driving by on the highway of where a church might fit geographically and historically. So I caught those notes, but you could just as easily walk into a church like that and find, you know, something that looks very simple and low church evangelical. But walking in the doors pretty quickly, as soon as I saw them swing open, I was like, oh, okay, they're really trying to communicate something with their building here. And there have certainly been churches I've gone to where I've said, okay, well, what does all of this mean? And the answer is, well, people sit in those chairs. And then the man stands behind that pulpit, and that's where we keep the offering plates. And it's all 100% practical. I felt like this was going to be in the 75, 80, 90% intentional theological. So that really stood out to me right off the bat. And honestly, when I walked into church, I thought we're going to have a really fun video tomorrow because there's a billion cool things to ask about in here.
What did you make of the baptismal font right there in the smack dab geographical center of the people?
Anything that isn't a dunk tank is going to look weird and different to me. Obviously, my tradition is believers' baptism by immersion. So yeah, I'm not scared of, and I certainly have been around other traditions and other styles of fonts. But I sat there during the service when I had a few free moments here or there and kind of mused about why it was sitting in the middle of the room. It struck me as odd. I could tell everything else was on purpose, so I assumed there was some meaning or intentionality to it. But I wasn't able to wrap my brain around that until I got to ask Will the following day on the tour.
What did he tell you?
Well, he pointed out a handful of things. He said that the font initially, back in the day, was at the in the narthex at the front of the church. And I've seen that a lot. Symbolically, this is the entrance into the church, into a relationship with Christ. I've seen it closer, you know, in the back of the nave at several churches I've been to. I've seen a few at the front. The Orthodox Church had it at the front near the stage. That's probably not what they call it. I probably just screwed that up. At the front. But I'd never seen one positioned like that. So I sat and I stared at it and I thought, well, maybe it's just so everybody can see because it's a really important personal moment. And then Will explained that, no, look at this compass underneath that, you know, points out in all these different directions. And the idea is that, please correct me if I'm getting this wrong, but that this baptism isn't just an initiation into a thing that is static. This baptism is a call to what is next, which is to take this baptism and the blessings that go in a relationship with Christ out to those around you and to the world. And I thought, well, that's pretty genius.
What were you surprised to learn about Lutheran doctrine or practice?
I hope that we've been talking long enough that you can tell that I don't want to be the guy that goes around and is like, I don't know what your church is doing on this. I don't want to criticize anybody. I really do want to learn. And the part that was most and maybe is still most head-scratching to me is the relationship between the Eucharist and salvation and the strong emphasis on the initiation of faith on the part of God and the response to faith coming after, but not in the Reformed Calvinist sense. There's a triangle of theology there that even for as long as I've been doing this, I'm just having a little trouble wrapping my brain around how all of these function together into something salvific. And so I guess what I expected, because of how closely aligned I've always imagined myself to be with LCMS from a distance, I kind of expected that when it came to like the gospel, we'd say it pretty similarly. And I think we arrive somewhere close, but we definitely don't come at that conversation the same way. And so that's something that I'm eager to just keep learning more about.
So the sacramental nature of Lutheran theology was kind of driven home for you in what you saw in your conversations with Pastor Whedon.
Yeah, both fascinatingly and confusingly. Again, offering no criticism, but as an outsider looking in, who's very steeped and conditioned and studied in one way of Protestant theological thought, I couldn't help but look at this and have it cross my mind. Like it just looks like they stopped reforming before everybody else. And on the one hand, I'll be honest, it's kind of off-putting. I mean, it feels like it, you know, the sola gratia, the by faith alone aspects to me feel in tension with that. But on the other hand, it's really not off-putting. It's really attractive because, as I mentioned in my video, the whole worship service is one of few services I've ever been to that doesn't feel like it's a part of a fight. It feels like it's this atemporal, is the term I used, expression of faith where if I walked in and I didn't have a few key cues to look at, it would be hard to figure out exactly what tradition this even is because there are elements of things from all over time that I don't think a lot of churches have found a way to put under the same roof with a cohesive sense of theology. So I guess the thing that really stood out to me as both confusing and awesome are two sides of the same coin, and I suppose I just need to continue to ask questions and wrestle with that.
I think it's summed up for us in the whole idea that I'm sure Pastor Whedon mentioned, and that is the means of grace. We see no tension whatsoever as long as we understand that what God does through the preaching of his word, through baptism, through the Lord's Supper, these are entirely God's work. They are acts, literally acts of God, miracles that he does among his people, wherein he engenders and maintains faith. And it is actually grace alone in action, which is why we call them means of grace. But I definitely encourage you to continue to question and ask those questions.
Well, I super like everybody I've met, and everybody's been very kind in answering my questions. And I feel like we need to run some of my questions and your answers through some kind of Google Theology Translate app, because some of it just seems that we speak slightly different language on these things. And that's been fun, because in the past, I really haven't felt a great connection with Lutheranism, or especially the Missouri Synod Lutheran Church. And you guys just opened up your doors to me, and no one has been offended or weird or jerky that I think other things or come from a different background and am not totally satisfied or clear after the first question and answer. Everybody's just been so patient and nice. And I appreciate that, because whether I someday end up landing in the same neck of the woods as you guys on all of these questions or not, I think we're allies, and I really want to understand my teammates and the people who are out there being ambassadors of the gospel and nurturing the work of Christ in their own life. And that's tough to do when people put the defenses up and they get weird. And you guys haven't done that, and I really appreciate it.
One of the things that I think Pastor Whedon does so well, and it's part of the reason why we've brought him on our enterprise to do an entirely new show for us, is he carries along with all of his teaching of the Bible. I saw it in the questions he was answering for you. He has this kind of encyclopedic knowledge of church history. Yeah. And it's like he, you know, gets up and has breakfast with Augustine or something like that, and can speak of it in such easy ways. One of the things that I think he emphasized when you guys were talking, if I recall, was that unlike many other Lutherans, the Missouri Synod still has a unconditional subscription to the Book of Concord. I even think I saw Book of Concord sitting on your desk.
That was intentional.
In the video. Yep.
Someone was kind enough to hand me one of those, and I thought, yeah, I need to thumb through that more, and I'm going to sneak that into the video. So
what
I did.
Well, thank you for doing that. What were your thoughts on that? That this is a church that says, you know, we can tell you exactly what we believe in this book that was published by the Reformers in 1580.
Well, one, I'm a history guy, history of theology, history of thought, so I love that connection to the past. Two, I'm a history guy. So I look at that and I know, man, that becomes pretty sacred pretty fast. You can't push back on something like that when a denomination has it. And so one of the things that I'm interested in learning more about as I get to know you all more is just, what role does it play? At what point do you feel tension with it? I mean, obviously, I understand your theology of Scripture, and I don't hear anybody talking about the Book of Concord beyond the Scripture it includes as being inspired. But these things can become very immovable with time. So I'm actually interested to just read through it. It's going to take me a while, and get a sense of, you know, where might there be tension as time moves forward and the questions change, and where might there be grounding that's incredibly helpful that a lot of more low church evangelicals lack because they don't have such a document and don't have such a history.
Matt Whitman is host of the 10-Minute Bible Hour on YouTube. You'll find a link to the 10-Minute Bible Hour at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Matt, thank you very much.
This was a delight. Thank you.
When we come back, Dr. John Ward Montgomery joins us. We'll talk about 20th century Luther scholar Gerhard Ferdy on the inerrancy and inspiration of Scripture. Why do the Lutheran confessions quote the ancient church fathers? Find out in Pastor Will Whedon's column, Why We Bother with the Fathers, in the latest Issues Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Professor Adam Kuntz details his journey from the Book of Common Prayer to the Book of Concord. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death, and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th Century. The 11th Century. The 8th Century. The 4th Century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
The Substitute Organist Service, aptly abbreviated SOS, really has come to our rescue.
Pastor Jim Hollowatch of Christ Lutheran Church in Jackson, Mississippi.
With the ever-growing shortage of skilled musicians in our community, we were approaching a real crisis. But thanks to the Substitute Organist Service, help is always just minutes away. With its easy, intuitive interface, friendly customer service, and outstanding musicianship, you really couldn't ask for more.
You can find out more about the Substitute Organist Service at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Do you long for a church that celebrates the divine service with reverence and joy, but without the unbiblical baggage imposed by a supposedly infallible hierarchy? Do you long for a church that confesses a divinely instituted office of the holy ministry for the giving of the Lord's gifts to his people and yet values and lifts high the priesthood of all believers? Welcome to the Lutheran Church. We're what you've been looking for. Find an historic, authentic church near you on the Find a Church page at issuesetc.org.